So just to clarify, I'm Kori Santapin, and Aksel Siepmann is over there. He's the managing director of Navy's financing group. Next to him, we have Mr. David Solden, a partner at Deloitte. And on my far right, you have Per Olav Karlsen, CEO and managing partner. So I think I speak on behalf of all of us thanking Capital Link for hosting this event. And the topic for this panel discussion is restructuring. And even though restructuring has a negative ring to it, the good thing about restructuring is that it can actually help the industry solve some of the problems we've been discussing today. I think if I try to summarize at least my understanding of it, it can be summarized in oversupply, high leverage, and maybe to some extent fragmentation. And the way I've always thought about restructuring is you have kind of two types of restructuring. You have the industrial restructuring, addressing oversupply, addressing fragmentation, addressing cost cuts, scrapping, and on the other hand, you have the financial restructuring, addressing the high leverage. And my experience from the last 12 months, at least in Norway, where we've had this wave of restructuring the offshore industry, is that the two seem kind of difficult to align, or at least to carry out at the same time. When you come to scrapping of ships, you want to do consolidation, but when you're trying to focus on consolidation, you'll find that most of the market players are caught up, worried about their liquidity, negotiating with their banks. So my first question to the panelists is it possible to do this at the same time, or do we need a two-step approach to this?
Should I take that? Thanks. Look, I think as Lindsay just mentioned in her talk, the key to successful restructuring is planning and process, and provided you correctly plan for things, and you put the right process in place, and you get properly advised at the right time, you bring people to the table at the right time, then I don't think there's any reason why you can't do the two together.
Okay. You think we should distinguish between what you could say is like one strong party coming into a weak party, simply acquiring the shares, injecting capital, and the kind of more merging situations where you have two weak parties both struggling at the same time with their own lenders and then at the same time consolidating?
How does that work?
Yeah, it's working.
Ah, okay. The question is, how do you find consolidation? I mean, if you ask a few bankers if they speak about consolidation, they like to create larger, stronger entities where they basically reduce the number of clients, where they combine interests insofar that they deem that there will be a better negotiation power, for example, when it comes to chartering out certain vessel classes. Yeah. And of course, for those people that are regarded as core clients, consolidation can be a nice thing. I must say the average restructuring client usually doesn't have that luxury, and becoming the victim of a consolidation process is probably something that you would definitely want to avoid. So I find it very hard to answer the question insofar because it depends so much on which side are you on. Of course, restructuring and consolidation can be a big opportunity for those people that are the winners and insofar that manage to attract additional vessels under ownership, under management. And they don't necessarily all have to be financially strong. I mean, especially in Germany, we've seen a few groups that I would say don't necessarily have the most healthiest balance sheet. But for example, they offered a great type of service, and so far they were attractive parties for the lenders to take on additional assets and basically to help to manage these assets in a professional way. But as I said, in most cases, I would say that approach is more of a challenge because let's not forget the average ship owner, just in terms of number, only manages a small amount of assets and. Then the case is how do you avoid consolidation, because consolidation means you go out of business.
Right. No, thank you for that.
I would like to sort of address that question a little bit. I think The question of whether you will see restructuring and consolidation happening in a combination happens when you have investors, private equity, hedge funds, industrial players with strong finances who decide that a particular sector or a segment of a sector is bombed out and they have money to go out and take the opportunity and pick up the pieces. That's a situation where you can restructure a bombed out segment of a sector. Typically is what we're seeing in Norway today, where you have the Aker Group going in, buying up Solstad, and then buying up REM Offshore, and putting more money into it, being able to restructure the debt side of those companies with the banks, because the bank knows that these guys are in it for the long run. They have a lot of businesses that are aligned to that particular segment of the industry. And that's when you will see that. But I think restructuring as a topic for this session is constituted by a number of different things. You can restructure a single ship. You can restructure a particular company. You can be talking about that. You can be talking about restructuring an industry or a sector of an industry. So I think from my perspective, it's definitely... These restructuring efforts can come in all shapes and forms. Consolidation is useful when you have a particular investor going in, putting a lot of money into something that is completely bombed out. But it's, for me, impossible to see that consolidation of the container shipping market is going to do anything to rectify the oversupply of tonnage. So it's that is going to be a long and painful waiting game until the ships are sufficiently of those ships are old enough or obsolete enough to be scrapped. It will be a situation where other companies like Hanjin may go bankrupt. I do not necessarily think that, and I'm sure that there are container ship operators that will disagree with me on this, but a consolidation of more of the large carriers is for me. It's doubtful as to whether that will really lead to much, unless these guys are able to sit down in their liner conferences and agree on rates. In which case, you may end up having conflicts with cartel rules and things like this. So, it's a very fragmented picture.
While this waiting game is going on, of course, the companies need to make sure that they have their financing in order. And a lot of companies are probably looking at some wall of default sometime either next year or the year after. At what time, Axel, do you think is the right time to start restructuring and initiate these processes?
Well, our experience is that you believe you are basically a company that need restructuring, start the process as early as possible for a very simple reason. Our experience is you better come up with a game plan and present it to your lenders than your lenders come with a game plan and present it to you. For the very simple reason that if you put yourself into the shoes of a lender today, probably I would say 60% of your clients might be in one form of distress or the other. And none of these organizations was historically made to deal with that many restructuring cases at the same time. So naturally, they can only be proactive by themselves about a certain number of cases per quarter, per year, whatever. And so far as you are a distressed client and you proactively come up with a game plan prior to them having worked something out, the chances that they first look at your proposal prior to them starting to think and spend a lot of time and effort on what are their own thoughts is, there's a fair chance of likelihood that if somebody, if you come up with something that is somehow balanced, that also addresses the issues of the banks, you might be successful. And so far, I can only clearly say the earlier the better, because unless you are so confident that shipping markets turn around significantly in 3 months, you better start immediately.
Yeah, I think I'd sort of echo that completely. I think on the one hand, whilst you've got a relationship with your relationship bankers, then why wouldn't you leverage that as much as you possibly can? And before it passes to the workout teams who don't have the relationship that you can leverage. And then on top of that, I think we're seeing a lot more complicated structures out there. There's a big disparity between a senior lender and a bondholder and a note holder. Again, the more you can get those guys to the table and solve their problem before, as Axel said, before they try and solve it for you, the better.
Let me add something, maybe. And you know, it's not only a question of the relationship between a bank and a lender. It's also there's competition for the good investors. Mm-hmm. So the earlier you start looking for the right partners, the right investors, and you team up with somebody, I mean, if you come second and the nice guys are already taken by somebody else, you probably deal with those ones that are left. And any time we see that, I mean, even though I would say in general, shipping markets have been in a state of distress now since late 2008, we've seen certain phases where there was larger investor interest, where there was more pain, and you can really see a wave of restructuring and a wave of investors, and usually the early bird catches the worm. So we've seen a few companies that really turned restructuring into an opportunity by teaming up with the right guys, and then rather expanding what you just mentioned at the very beginning with the question, so taking advantage and suddenly buying, you know, the neighboring assets rather than being bought themselves.
If I may also add, I think in most cases a distress situation, a restructuring of a distress situation is very seldom debtor-driven. It's creditor-driven. Restructuring in more cases than not start too late, far too late, and it's driven by creditors in most of the cases, which means it leaves the principal, the principal owner of a shipping company, normally on the sideline during the process. This is probably something we will discuss a little bit more. It's very, very few times I have seen that the owner takes proactive steps to sort out their balance sheet problems at an early stage. They end up hoping for the best. Mm-hmm. They're embarrassed to show the world that they're going under. There are all sorts of psychological problems with doing something about it. And it's usually, they come too far by the time you're starting a restructuring.
If we then move on to the question of how to restructure, there seems to be two main routes. You either have the in-court restructuring or the out-of-court restructuring. And my question, maybe for David, is how do you choose between those two, and what do you see more of in the marketplace?
I think it's entirely situation specific. I think at the moment, you know, I think the choice for a large company has tended to be to run off to a US bankruptcy court and file for Chapter 11. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, you get your global stay, you can control a longer term restructuring process through a Chapter 11, but you know, it's time consuming and it's enormously expensive. I think if you compare that to what we've seen in a lot of the Scandinavian deals, they have been much more consensual. You know, agreeing private deals with a small group of lenders, slightly different industry, but you take something like Seadrill, where there's a lot of different debt in a lot of different entities, and an owner who is picking off lenders one by one as one mechanism of dealing with the balance sheet problem. So principally, we've seen Chapter 11, we've seen private deals, but what we're now seeing is some of the private deals that were done in 2011, 12 or 13 starting to unwind, and creditors this time around being in a very different position, either because they have no capacity to continue to lend or because they've realised that there's a more fundamental issue with the business that they're lending to. And so I think in the next wave of restructurings, we're expecting to see a few more inventive structures coming through, either the ways for new finance to come in. I think we've seen in Atlantic there was some UK prepacks to deliver some of the assets directly to lenders, which was the first time that had been used in this situation. And I think we're going to be seeing a few more of those sorts of developments coming rather than continued extensions to loan maturities.
So I guess all of you guys have considerable experience restructuring in various parts of the world and in Europe. Have you picked up on any different approaches or processes to restructuring, either across continents or even within Europe? Are there cultural differences of how to approach this, or is it pretty much the same?
I couldn't really say. I think our experience are basically European-based businesses. We haven't been involved in any Asian or American distress situations, so I couldn't comment on the cultural side of the thing. What I do think, though, which is important to have in mind, is that in the real estate industry, you have sort of the three golden rules of investing for success: location, location, location. In working with distress situation in the maritime sector, you can use the analogy, which is haircuts, haircuts, haircuts. That is the key to creating a successful restructuring, in my opinion. And haircuts comes in many forms. It doesn't only mean money. It means, among other things, like what Lindsay was referring to earlier, force time on the stakeholders, deferral of loans, deferral of credits, but you also always need new equity. And then it's a question of balancing interest. And in those situations, you know that diplomacy is extremely important, because you are going to negotiate between parties that have completely different levels of strength.
We have been involved in quite a number of German restructurings, of course, but also to a fair extent, especially in Greece and Turkey. And I see indeed a very big difference between the two jurisdictions. For a very simple thing, because German law is so strict with the managing directors in a restructuring, because if you basically get it wrong, if you become insolvent, if you fail to file for insolvency, you commit a criminal offense, and you can effectively be jailed. Not that it has happened very often in Germany in shipping, but it's unfortunately the inconvenient truth. And that creates a strong discipline. From the lender's perspective, it creates a huge opportunity, because it's actually, as the means of last resort, you don't have to arrest the ship. You can simply basically ask for your loans to be repaid, which triggers insolvency filing. And then you basically, an administrator is appointed, and he will at the end be paid by the bank, so he will do what the bank ultimately instructs. And in so far, it's very lender friendly, as you don't need to start chasing the ships everywhere on the planet, whereas in a restructuring, for example, where all of the entities are domiciled in the Marshall Islands, it's very difficult to find a judge on the Marshall Islands. So you basically have to start looking where your ship is and try to actually chase your ship. And that process tends to be much more costly. And in so far, I would say a German restructuring, or the whole German process, is much more a formal one that works along the law. Whereas in the international environment, especially in those jurisdictions where there are less formal legal environments, even the contracts, whether they are written under English law or whatever law, just put them aside, have a negotiation about, what's the reality, and that is sometimes very painful to the lender, it's sometimes very painful to the ship owner, but it's much more a voluntary negotiation process, with arrest being the ultimate, basically, means that, of course, then triggers huge costs. And that's very different in Germany. In Germany, can actually basically take a ship owner out of control, and most of these business partners maybe potentially not even taking much notice of that, because the ship simply continues to trade.
Thank you. Building further on the differences between jurisdictions, I mean, shipping is indeed a global industry, and as Lindsay mentioned, it's not that difficult to establish some sort of center of interest in the U.S. and filing for Chapter 11 there. I believe it's a peppercorn. That's what you need over there. Now, forum shopping is often discussed during a restructuring process. And for a long time, of course, Chapter 11 often springs to mind. I've also picked up on concerns over the costs of Chapter 11. David, you mentioned those. Maybe you can elaborate there. And is still, I mean, first of all, what does a Chapter 11 cost? And second of all, is still Chapter 11 the main route to go if you choose in-court restructuring, or are other alternatives on the table now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the cost question is how long is a piece of string in many ways. We've seen them done relatively quickly, but relatively quickly in Chapter 11 terms is probably, you know, minimum 3 months. And we've seen them take, you know, a long time. There's one going through at the moment, which is, I think, 15 months down the line and has currently got restructuring fees of $60 million. So, you know, sometimes you just don't know what it's going to cost. And that's one of the big issues. Clearly, that's quite a large case, but, you know, it's not a cheap way through. I think that, you know, as Axel touched on, there are sort of big differences jurisdictionally between the legal regimes from an insolvency perspective in terms of the amount of protection and control creditors can have in the ultimate process. But then if you add into that the admiralty law issues as well, actually an in-court process to restructure a shipping company is pretty complicated. And hence why, you know, as a ship owner, you have a lot of cards early on in the process because none of the lenders really want to go down the process of taking control. I think even in Germany, where they have got the ability to take control, correct me, Axel, if I'm wrong, but I think if they then own the business afterwards, they bear quite a significant risk of losing their debt in the business on the way through. So even though there's a process to go through, it's not necessarily a solution. And actually, the people that know how to run these ships the best are the owners. So unless there's a significant issue with the owner, the ship is in the best hands where it is, and the banks need to work a way to restructure effectively around that.
I think that a restructuring effort should be one should try to do all the restructuring efforts possible before one goes to a Chapter 11 situation. Chapter 11 is basically to solve when conflict in interests cannot be balanced somehow. And it should in many ways be a last resort, in my opinion. Although I have seen owners that have been in very strong conflicts with their creditors, and where the banks have had really no other option but to force them into Chapter 11 situation in order to remove them. Because they are, actually, I agree on the general level, the owners are probably the best people to keep the fleets going, but that's not always the case. Some cases you have to take it away from them. I think the end result of a restructuring process is very seldom that the original owner still continues to operate the fleet. The Chapter 11 situation, we've seen them many times, normally ends up with a different owner at the helm of that particular company or that particular fleet. I would say from our perspective, and we work with restructuring cases, one of our main efforts from the very beginning is to create a consensus among all the stakeholders, because we believe that that's the best way of preserving value and where you can reach the best results. But it's a tough game because those guys who are losing everything are very hard to convince.
Picking up on that, you're saying that often the end game of restructuring is that the owners lose control over their fleet. Is there any rule of thumb, would you say, on what the owners could hope to get out of it if we set aside the situations where all you're doing is pushing back the debt? If you're starting to ask for haircuts, conversion debt to equity, what can the owner hope for?
Oh, that's a hard one. If you look at what's been done, you look at Excel Maritime, the owner has nothing, rightfully so. You have other cases what is left there to the owners. I think it's more a creditor protection than anything else, really, in those cases that I've seen, recent cases. If you go way back also, you look at Vida and the C-Corp situation, which has become a C-Corp operation, new principal owners in that. So I think I cannot really at the moment see a situation where the original owner walks out of a Chapter 11 and maintains control. Anybody here? Can anybody give me a name?
I think it does depend on what the cause of the distress is, though. If it's owner related, then absolutely agree with you. Yeah. I think there can be other market forces that force people into this position, where the owner is sort of an innocent bystander, and in those cases, you can see a scenario where it would happen. That said, I'm not aware of one.
I think it pretty much depends on what type of company are we talking about. Are we talking about a private company? I mean, or are we talking about a publicly listed company? Because, you know, in one case we really speak about the owners, in one case we speak about the management team, and usually find it makes such a big difference whether you're talking to the management team or whether you're talking to the real owners, what the objectives of restructuring are. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much then also translates into whether, you know, Chapter 11 filing is considered as an appropriate measure. I would say for a real owner, it doesn't really help. For a management team, yeah, wait, maybe not. Yeah, can help. Do you become popular with your lenders filing Chapter 11? Definitely not, because it triggers huge costs and it creates an enormous amount of work. And banks need to be very careful, you know, what they say in these restructurings. You know, there have been very delicate cases, so understandably, that's not a very popular measure. I think from an owner's perspective, it's also important. Do you consider the restructuring to be as a means as to get out of, for example, personal guarantees that you've given? And is exiting from shipping, you know, in return for being released from those guarantees, something that is acceptable to you? Or do you want to stay in shipping and also pass the business on to the next generation, in which case you might need some of the key lenders in the next 20 years? And in so far, there are so many different aspects. I wouldn't want to give a general answer to any of these questions, say, well, this is the preferred way, that's the preferred way, because any situation really requires a tailor-made solution that fits to the very well-defined objectives. And those it makes a lot of sense to spend really a lot of time thinking about the objectives that you actually want to achieve prior to you start the restructuring.
I think what Axel is saying is very, very important and very relevant. There is a lot of restructuring. We're not normally involved in the big restructuring that you read about in Tradewinds. We do a lot of smaller restructuring also for banks, but we have, despite what I've just recently said, we have some good owner clients, German, that have come to us at an early stage in their distress and said, can you guys help us? On the basis of that, we've been able to sit down with the banks, together with them, restructure the loans, got both haircuts in terms of money and in deferrals, and we've been able to maintain the ownership with the owner, highly diluted, but we also managed to bring new capital into those particular vessels. We've done them on individual vessel spaces, but together with a particular owner. So he maintains control over the operation of the fleet, he maintains an ownership, and it's all done in a very amicable way with the banks, because they were very early with identifying and admitting, acknowledging that we have a problem.
I think in the Norwegian media, there's been quite a lot of focus on the situation of the bondholders, and it's been, at least some have argued, that they have been less constructive than the banks, or at least proven more difficult than the banks to talk to and to work with. Do you have any insider tips on that? Is it correct?
Sorry, the question was?
Is it correct? Is the criticism towards them fair, or and how can we deal with them?
I think what we've seen in the Norwegian press is a bit of local gossip, and it's frustrated. It's the most frustrated people are the ones who are taking the biggest losses and are seeing that they're being subject to what they consider to be vulture capital. They think that their banks are treating them unfairly. I think that's basically what we're seeing. I think they are still in a sort of a denial situation, and they have to wake up. I think the banks has to do the only thing they have to do, that is protect their values. And they cannot go on with those particular structures they have. And a bank will, you know, grab with both arms anybody coming in, bringing new money into that those particular situations, and that's what we're seeing. They have new people coming in saying, we're going to come in with new capital, we'll sit down with you and discuss with you, and then the old principals will have difficulty maintaining the steering wheel. So until at least they've tried out until the banks have tried out what is a better solution for us.
I think the other thing on bondholders, just quickly, is that if you think about how their securities are traded, they've all got to remain on the public side of an information war. So whereas the banks can go private and properly engage in restructuring discussions early, it's much harder for a bondholder to do that when they might well want to just sell out the week after. And they're not going to engage in something where they're going to lock themselves into a long period with the company, because the bonds are traded on a daily basis.
So we have 3 minutes left, just about. So we'll revert to the future. Are there any questions from the audience to the panel at this stage?
David, you mentioned the UK prepack.
Yeah.
Did you say Atlantic?
I think Atlantic Offshore did one for the Scottish subsidiaries.
Are you able to do like a 2-minute summary of it for non-restructuring specialists? Like,
I wasn't involved in Atlantic specifically, so I can't give you an overview of that. But effectively, it was a UK administration appointment over a UK entity, which enabled the secured lenders in that entity to take control away from the management.
Any other questions? Okay, so we have 2 minutes for the future then. There's been quite a bit, at least I've seen from my practice, that dealing with a number of lenders in a number of different subsidiaries, financing a number of different vessels in different tranches, is quite complex when you're trying to unwind the structure and trying to tidy it up. And I've heard at least some voices from some of the banks saying that we might not be doing this again. And there seems to be two issues coming to mind. One is that we need more clean structures, financing structures. And second, there needs to be a clearer regulation of the relationship between the secured creditors and the unsecured creditors. Do you think that we'll see changes to that going forward? Or are we just waiting for the market to come back and then people will start bidding for credit again?
Let's hope for the latter. of course, anyone who's involved in the ship finances, I would like to have a better, let's say, have cleaner structures. There's no doubt about it. But again, it's a two-sided thing as well. Do you want to have all your eggs in one basket as a shipping company, or do you want to spread your risk a little bit, or do you see opportunities in many different sectors? Depends. If you typically work with a non-listed, privately held company, they tend to be involved in several sectors. They look at opportunities as and when, and they buy a chemical tanker when that's opportune, and they fix it out to Stolt-Nielsen or to Odfjell or Nordic or anybody else. They buy an LPG carrier when that is opportune. They buy a couple of MR tankers when that's opportune, or a bulk carrier. I mean, I think that's very much driven by who the owners are. I'm pretty sure that access to finance for also these smaller and mid-sized companies will be easier if they clean up their structures. Whether it's ideal from a risk management point of view is a completely different question. Easier for the banks to understand? Yes.
Okay, my final question then is, everyone's wondering when the market will return, and at least some indication of that will be the runway required in the ongoing restructurings. What kind of runway are the creditors requiring from the company in order to participate in a constructive way? Are we looking at 2019, 20, 21, 22?
Yes.
Okay.
all of the above.
David,
I must say, maybe I'm a little bit more disillusioned, but I think in today's market, everybody's happy if you can see what happens in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's good enough. And 2021 would be nice if you can achieve that, but in absence of cash flow in most of the major vessel classes, I would say, you know, if you have a game plan for the next 2 years, you'll get a big applause from everybody.
And then there's a lot of hurdles to get over in the next 18 months as well, from a debt refinancing perspective. So
yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
Okay, thank you to the panel for participating.
Thank you.